to form an association. We have formed one association, and name is the Small Business Association of BC Tax Cab Drivers. Join that association. We don't need another one. If we join, everybody joins our association, we'll be successful.
Fightback.org. In addition to listening to the voice of DC cab drivers live on the radio, you can listen live online at WST1120.com or on your phone at 712-432-6620. Again, you can listen live at WST1120.com or on your phone at 712-432-6620. In both Prince George's County and in the District of Columbia, drivers are moving forward with petitions. Yesterday, as the rain poured down and Hurricane Irene barreled north, five members of the Taxi Workers Alliance submitted more than 4,600 signatures to the Prince George's County Board of Elections. The drivers were required to submit 3,300 valid signatures from Prince George's County registered voters by yesterday in order to meet the first threshold of getting the anti-driver legislation known as CB3 placed on the ballot as a referendum in November 2012. The Prince George's County Board of Elections stayed open specifically to collect the signatures from the drivers, according to Elections Administrator Alicia Alexander. "We will review and verify the signatures, and then we'll go from there," she said. Ms. Alexander explained that the Board of Elections has 20 business days to process the signatures, but she said, "We're going to try to get them processed within 7 to 10 business days." Drivers, however, don't have the luxury of being able to wait around for the Board of Elections to rule on whether they have submitted enough valid signatures. Instead, they must immediately begin collecting additional signatures because on October 11th, 44 days from now, they must submit an additional 6,700 for a total of 10,000 signatures from Prince George's County registered voters. Earlier in the week, in a phone conversation with Elections Administrator Alexander, I asked if the Board of Elections would take into consideration the fact that drivers have been prevented from collecting signatures at public events throughout Prince George's County. Ms. Alexander said that wasn't the role of the Board of Elections, but drivers say they are considering pursuing a legal challenge. Visit thefightback.org for reports on drivers being kicked out of public events on August 2nd, National Night Out, in Bowie, New Carrollton, Morningside, and Temple Hills. Yesterday, after they submitted more than 4,600 signatures, I spoke with Henok Wogders, Dele Omanejo, and Isidore Asuko, all three members of the Prince George's County Taxi Workers Alliance. I began by asking Wogders to describe the handing in of the signatures, which had just taken place.
We just submitted our first round where we were required to submit 3,300 valid signatures. We turned in close to 4,600, 4,700. So we were good for the first round, and today was the deadline that we have to submit it.
Talk about some of the obstacles you faced. We're joined by a number of other drivers. Dele, we've spoken about what took place in New Carrollton. Isidore, we spoke about what took place in Bowie. But overall, give a general picture of some of the obstacles that drivers faced in getting these signatures.
Okay. I mean, it was a big challenge in terms of, first of all, going out there, leaving your job where, you know, most of the drivers who have to pay $17,000 and, you know, they have to sacrifice that to go out, collect those signatures, you know. They have to sacrifice their family time. They have to sacrifice their working hours. But also we faced some challenges that, you know, we were thrown out from some of the public events when we went out to collect the signatures. And as recently as yesterday, to the new senior home dedication in Laurel, we were told to leave. There was a big disagreement, I think, between some of those elected officials, like, you know, council member Mary. But by the time, you know, they allowed us to come in, most of the drivers who went there to collect were gone. But, you know, we faced some challenges, but I think we beat the odds. You know, we made it.
Can you recount, Dele, what took place in New Carrollton briefly?
We have the same similar situation in Beckett Field, you know, at the family day. We were kicked out by one of the officers who told us, you know, that we have to pre-register before we can collect a signature, you know, at the public forum. We went, you know, to the mayor. We went, you know, to the chief of police. They gave us, you know, the order to go back and collect, you know, what we were doing. That, you know, they didn't see no harm. All of a sudden, when the officer came back and saw us, he discovered, you know, that we were still collecting. we told him, you know, that the mayor and then the chief of police has allowed us to collect. He told us to follow him to the chief of police. When we got there together with the mayor, the officer whispered something to the hearing of the chief of police. The chief of police in turn turned, you know, to the mayor and said that, no, we could not hear what the officer said. We were kicked out. We took the badge number and then, you know, the officer's name. And then when we left the field, Lema called me and said that somebody has called the chief of police and the mayor. They have allowed us to come back and continue, you know, the process. But by the time we got there, they just bluntly told us that we cannot collect signature, that we should not enter the field. And we could not understand the reason why we could not collect signature in a public forum whereby a whole lot of people that could have signed for us, that could have made our job easy, were disallowed. We did not harass anybody. We politely asked them questions, you know, but told them, you know, what our reason for collecting situation. They understand, and they were very happy in order to help us out, in order to break monopoly, in order to make sure that a little man is allowed to work. We were very, very surprised about what happened today. I just thank God. I thank all my fellow drivers. I thank, you know, a whole lot of people like you that make it a point of duty in order to energize us, in order to be able to get more than 5,000 signatures.
Now, by the way, about the New Carrollton incident at Beckett Field, yes. The mayor declined to respond. He said he emailed me saying he was going to respond and then never did, and the chief of police didn't respond. But the city administrator, Mike Downs, did respond. He said that you were not asked to leave altogether, but were asked to move from the main, to go to the entrance to the field, and you didn't miss any chance to get signatures. He also said that the process of collecting petition signatures was annoying people. That's a quote.
No, I'm very glad that you brought all these things in this interview, because the administrator was lying. It's a blatant lie. He did not tell us, you know, to go to the gate. He did not, you know, tell us. There was no time that anybody reported us, you know, that we are causing headache. It was a lie. I look at it as a conspiracy to prevent us from doing what we were supposed to do legally. That is the bottom line. It's a flat lie.
We're talking about the nights of August 2nd. Isidore Asuko, you were also collecting signatures, National Night Out in Bowie. What took place there?
Well, first and foremost, I want to thank God for the experience we've gone through, that is still with us, and He's still guiding us through. It was a learning process for us, that but we never expected that. We were at Allen Pond Park in Bowie to collect petitions, but we were surprised that the police have to chase us out, not only push us out of the, of the crowd, but chase us out of the environment. And we have to obey, but then we later on found out that that was not the process, that the chief of police have informed them, but they took upon themselves, whether it is racist, I don't know, but then they took it upon themselves to chase us out.
Chief Neski, Bowie chief of police, I spoke with him, and he confirmed that, in fact, he did tell you to leave. He thought that was appropriate. It wasn't that type of event, he said, but this was a public event.
Yes.
That was taking place. National Night Out, a lot of people, a lot of opportunities to collect signatures, but drivers in a number of instances, including in Allen Pond Park, were denied that opportunity.
What we knew is that we informed the chief of police of the county, which we hope that they have been informed, but they ignored the order and chased us out.
Any other thoughts folks want to share as we stand just outside?
Yeah, I just want to add a quick comment. You know, we did contact the chief of police for the Prince George's County to let him know that, you know, we're going to be among the public collecting the signatures so that we don't encounter any problems as we go on. But we don't know at this point whether the chief have ordered the county police officers not to kick us out, but we did let them know 48 hours before the event that, you know, we are participating as a public so that, you know, we wouldn't encounter, you know, any problem.
But you did.
We did inform them.
And yet you did encounter problems.
We did encounter problems. We were chased out from a lot of events. So the chief of police was informed ahead of time that we are going to be, you know, participating among the public trying to get, you know, signature signed. But what happened was, you know, otherwise.
And how does that impact? We're just on the other side of the door here. The Board of Elections has accepted the signatures, and now they go through a process of seeing what signatures are valid. The elections administrator said 7 to 10 business days. She'll get back to you. But lastly, again, how does what you've experienced, what drivers are experiencing pushed out, impact what just took place, the number of signatures that were handed in?
Yeah, you know, the number of signatures could have been, like, you know, a whole lot, you know, better. Like, you know, even though we required 3,300 and we submitted way, you know, the more than the required numbers, that number could have been, you know, like, you know, close to, you know, 9,000, 10,000, 11,000, you know, even more, if we were not prevented from participating in those events.
Dele.
We believe, you know, that the kind of attitude that the police in various jurisdictions have shown will not cow us down. We will do everything possible in the book to make sure that we hit our target with the help of God, because we are in no way going to be tired.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
That was Taxi Workers Alliance members Henok Wogdurs, Dele Omanejo, and Isadora Suko just after they submitted more than 4,600 signatures to the Prince George's County Board of Elections. Elections Administrator Alicia Alexander says she will try and get a ruling in 7 to 10 business days on whether the group has submitted enough to meet the first requirement of 3,300 valid signatures from Prince George's County registered voters. Taxi Workers Alliance members and their allies, however, cannot wait for the Board of Elections ruling. On October 11th, an additional 6,700 signatures are due. For more information, visit taxipetitions.com. And again, drivers are looking into the possibility of filing a lawsuit because they were prevented from collecting signatures at multiple public events. You can read and listen to the reports on several of these events at thefightback.org. This petition effort is being conducted in order to put the recently passed anti-driver legislation known as CB3 on the ballot as a referendum in November 2012. Here on the Voice of DC Cab Drivers, Prince George's County Council member Mary Lehman offered her thoughts on CB3 and described the county's taxi industry as being like a system of indentured servitude. Lehman went on to say, "It's shocking, really, that any industry in this day and age can operate legally in that fashion."
My immediate reaction was, in the op-ed piece, I call it, by likening it to the sharecropper system in the South, but I immediately said to myself, you know, this is like a system of indentured servitude is what I thought of. There's just no way it's no one's ever going to get ahead in a system like that. When you're paying out, you know, 50% right off the top of your earnings, you know, how do you ever, you know, even make ends meet, never mind get ahead? It's shocking, really, that any industry in this day and age can operate legally in that fashion. And it reminded me, you know, of Martin Luther King's words back in 1968, right before he was assassinated, when he went down to Memphis to talk to sanitation workers, and he talked about what a travesty it is for a man to, you know, work a full day for essentially half a day's pay. And I think that's exactly, I can't think of a better analogy for these cab drivers, the ones who have to affiliate with the companies.
That was District 1 Councilmember Mary Lehman. In a July 3rd op-ed in the Sunday Washington Post, Lehman wrote, "This is a classic David versus Goliath struggle. While cab companies pay the county $200 per year per licensed vehicle, drivers who affiliate with those companies pay a staggering $335 per week, or about 50% of their earnings, to essentially rent the license from the corporate holder." Appearing here on the Voice of DC Cab Drivers, Lehman invoked the work of Martin Luther King Jr. in discussing the taxi workers' struggle for economic dignity in Prince George's County. She said, quote, "It reminded me of Martin Luther King Jr. Martin Luther King's words back in 1968, right before he was assassinated, when he went down to Memphis to talk to sanitation workers. And he talked about what a travesty it is for a man to work a full day for essentially half a day's pay. I can't think of a better analogy for these cab drivers," she said. 48 years ago today, with Abraham Lincoln behind him and hundreds of thousands before him on the National Mall, Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his "I Have a Dream" speech. Today was supposed to mark the official unveiling of King's Memorial, which, as Democracy Now! Noted, is the first memorial on the National Mall not dedicated to a war, a president, or a white man. Due to Hurricane Irene, the official unveiling has been postponed. Today, on the 48th anniversary of the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, we turn to Martin Luther King Jr. in his own words. Here is the "I Have a Dream" speech that touched so many in its entirety, delivered 48 years ago today.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. And so we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time. From the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood, now is the time. Make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summer of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until that is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But that is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protest to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people, for many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is tied up with our destiny. That their freedom is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. And as we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied as long as our bodies, heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the cities. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their selfhood and robbed of their dignity for whites only. We cannot cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot, and a Negro... No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution and staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities. Knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friend, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. That one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream. My poor little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. Dream that one day down in Alabama with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. That one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee." "Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."